Doctor Who Special, The Giggle. And we're back, everybody, with the third and final special with David Tennant and, well, with David Tennant as the Doctor and Donna Noble back as his companion. There were three specials planned, and this is the third one, The Giggle with the Toy Maker, who is a classic villain. I do know that much, but I will be very honest that I am not up on my classic Who and have not seen his episode back from the first Doctor and don't know who the Toy Maker is, what his deal is, really, except for what happened in this episode. I don't know the backstory. Before we get into it, friendly reminder that this is a spoilerful review from the whole thing. Don't listen to this if you haven't seen the episode yet and you want to. And I would highly recommend, because as we get into it, my first thing, just overall review, is that I really enjoyed the episode. I thought it was fun. There were definitely moments of scariness. I thought that the effects were good. The craziness when the Doctor's there at the very beginning of, like, the world coming to an end and people just acting like crazy was really well done. So I thought the episode was good. I really enjoyed it overall. And I, we'll get to it at the end because I kind of want to go through different aspects, but I am not sure how I feel about the ending. I maybe will talk it out and use this format of the podcast to decide what I think when I get there. But the ending was very different than I had expected. So I was actually talking to a coworker about this episode on Friday before I left, about what we were going to do for the weekend. And one of the things, she had watched Doctor Who in the past, but she stopped during the Capaldi era. She didn't get into Capaldi. And so we were just kind of talking about that and the specials that are coming on, because she's a big Disney fan. So am I. So we both have Disney Plus to be able to watch the special. Or the specials. So she said something about wanting to watch them, and she said she really liked the David Tennant, Donna Noble era, so I was telling her that the first two specials were great and she should watch them, especially if she liked that era of Doctor Who. Anyway, don't need to get into that whole conversation about Doctor Who, but we actually did talk about Doctor Who quite a lot. But at the end of it, I was like, you know, and what I do know about this episode coming up, the special, is that David Tennant's going to regenerate. And I'm going to have to watch him regenerate again. And it's going to make me cry again. And so, you know, what I'm going to be doing on Saturday, I'm going to be crying. So that was my expectation going into the episode, is that I was waiting for the regeneration moment. And instead of regenerating, they bi-generate. Which is interesting. It's really fun in the episode. I'm just wondering what this, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it, but I am jumping way ahead because that happens very much at the end. So the episode of The Giggle starts with, before the credits scene of the toy maker in the 1920s, selling a puppet to a man in a toy store. And then this puppet is taken back to the inventor, or the guy's employer, who is inventing television. And this puppet's face is the first thing to be broadcast on television, and it catches fire and stuff. And I have not looked into it, but I think the guy's name is a historical figure. I just am not sure whether the puppet, like, really burnt like that. Maybe it did. I don't know. But it was a very creepy looking puppet, and the fire and everything. It was a very, I think, creepy scene, creepy, like, television image. The whole thing was creepy. So it worked well for the story, and the toy maker was a real creepy Neil Patrick Harris doing a fake German accent, like, very, like, bad, poorly done. I think I'm assuming on purpose, like, fake weird German accent. So it was interesting. But I think it worked. It was a good scene. And those characters will come back up later. That whole thing about using the toy maker's puppet on the first ever TV broadcast is important. So there you go. So then we cut back to the scene where it was that was at the very end of the last episode, where they had met Wilf, Donna's grandfather, on the corner. And he, told them that the world had gone mad and the doctor needed to save them. So they're still on the corner, but you don't see Wilf anymore. And obviously, the reason for that is that the actor has died, in real life. And so my understanding is that he was supposed to be in a couple scenes in this episode. I would assume that very beginning scene and then the family scene at the end. And, which would have been fabulous. I wish he was in that garden family scene at the very end, but again, we will get there. I keep jumping to the end. But yeah, it would have been fantastic if he was there, but obviously he was not. And that's very sad. But in the show world, he's still alive and well, and they did not kill him off in the show in any way. So this scene comes up, and you don't see Wilf anymore. But they do talk about him being kind of just right off screen because almost immediately the doctor sees that there's these car crashes and people are like running around and like hitting each other and grabbing things from each other and like just being complete like chaos. It looks very scary and I would get out of the street if this is what it was looking like. And he's like talking to this guy who runs out in front of a car for no reason. And the doctor's trying to ask him why, and he's just like, "Well, I pay taxes in my road. I'll do what I want with it. I can't drive, so I'm gonna walk on it." He's like, "But you could just walk over there on the sidewalk and not get hit by a freaking car." And he's like, "Well, don't tell me what to do." Anyway, so that happens, and then pretty much immediately, Unit shows up in their tanks and whatever, and there's just a brief thing where Donna and the doctor, or I think Donna specifically says, "Take care of my granddad." They promise they will. And so that is the last we see of Wilf there is, or we don't see him, we hear of him. But basically the idea is that Wilf was there. The unit people are gonna be making sure he gets home safely or taken care of during this craziness. So that happens, and they are taken with the TARDIS by Unit to this big crazy tower they have in London, I assume. That looks ridiculous, but cool. I enjoy it. It's fun. And it's got this crazy helipad, like jutting out from the side of it instead of like landing on the roof. It's like this weird thing that juts out from the side and then goes up and down like an elevator. I assume this is not a real thing that buildings have. I don't know. It kind of bothered me how like fake this building seemed. I don't understand what is going on here. But whatever, they have this cool building. So they're there and they're explaining the problem to the doctor, which turns out to be that there's these weird waves coming in. So basically the premise of this is that the South Koreans, I believe, have just launched a new satellite. And somehow, this one new satellite means that everyone in the world now has internet, which doesn't seem likely to me. Like, I feel like this is a stretch. I'm not an expert on how this works. Maybe it would just take one specific strategic satellite. Now, everyone in the world has access to the internet. But I just feel like that is not true. I feel like it would take more than that, and more infrastructure, and more screens getting out to people, and there are going to be, those little tribes that are still like not living a modern life, they still exist in different remote parts of the world. So I just don't buy it. But we're gonna move on from that and say, okay, fine, every single human on the entire planet is now connected to the internet through a screen. Sure, Jan. Sure, that's happening. But anyway, that's part of the story that the Koreans have put out, the South Koreans have put up the satellite that has made this happen, and that is what triggered this craziness, is that everyone's now connected to the internet. Not that this particular satellite has done anything nefarious, not that the South Koreans were doing anything nefarious, it's just that the whole world now being connected is what kind of triggered this thing. and it's sending out this specific wave signal, and they're trying to figure it out, and it's an arpeggio. La 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 la. And so it's affecting all the humans except for those that have traveled with the doctor. So that seems to be, having been in the TARDIS, seems to have protected them from it. And it's not affecting the doctor because he's not a human for some reason. And then they realize that it's from this puppet, like it's a laugh that the puppet does, apparently. Well, it's a laugh that you heard the master, or not the master, the toy maker. The master will come up later. The toy maker do at the beginning. He does kind of a ha 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 ha. Not that obviously, but he kind of does this little laugh that goes in this little arpeggio and the timing of it and stuff. And so this laugh, the doctor realizes it has been in sort of embedded in television itself, and any sort of moving picture image that you ever have seen is has it embedded, and so everyone has this sort of group memory of what of this little puppet face and laugh, which again feels off to me in that I don't feel like I've ever seen this image before in my life. I didn't know the history of television. Again, I don't know whether this pup where they're the this I'm assuming that the first TV image was this little puppet face. But I don't know if it actually burned and like what it actually was and all that kind of stuff. And also the giggle that he's talking about, the toy maker did it, but it wasn't the puppet. And I don't think the puppet, like the, it didn't have any sound. It was just a moving picture. So I don't know. I don't get where the, I have not watched it a second time. So I've only watched it once. Maybe I'm missing something, but I don't quite get where the giggle comes into it. Because I heard the toy maker do the giggle. I understand that, but like the puppet didn't do the giggle. So I don't know if the master or the toy maker somehow embedded it into the picture. But somehow that happened. And so just accept the giggle as part of that. And there's a really interesting scene where, so all the people in unit are able to not go. Basically, what they find out is the signal is going into everybody's head and it's making everyone turn into Trump, essentially. Sorry, that was my own little political thing, but it turns them into people who think that they are completely right 100% of the time and will not listen to anyone else. And it makes them very kind of tinfoil hat-y, feeling like everything, like everyone's out to get them and, you know, not trusting anyone, and it's very, turns them violent rather quickly. And we see actually Kate Stewart, I think the actress who plays her did a really good job of showing what this would look like, of how she turns into a completely different person, like quickly, with her anger and her, you know, fear-based reaction to all of this stuff. So they come up with a plan that they're going to knock out this South Korean satellite to, you know, stop whatever's happening to everyone, stop the signal from going out. Oh, interestingly, we get a little cameo from the same woman who used to play the news anchor back in Tennant's era, way back when. Used to see her all the time as, you know, the news reporter talking about whatever alien of the week it was. And she was on there talking about how those bands that they're all wearing to block them, block the signal in unit, are not safe and she doesn't trust them and they're trying to control us with them and I'm anti them and blah, blah, blah. Which they use that as kind of a reason for why they can't just give everyone the armbands and, you know, everybody will be fine. It's because people are so paranoid that they don't want those armbands. And they're scared of the armbands. So, there's that. Anyway, so they decide they're going to knock out the satellite. Oh, and then an old companion I didn't mention is there at unit. I forget her name already because I didn't watch Classic Who and I don't really know who she is. But, she's there working with unit now. And on computers and stuff, doing a good job, it seems like. So the doctor during this time has wants to figure out where that exact broadcast and puppet was from, and he's going to go back in time to find the original puppet, find the original signal. And so he and Donna hop in the TARDIS and off they go back to the 1920s. This is where he ends up going to the toy maker's shop and ends up in a toy maker's game. So the toy maker has this shop that he's set up. But the toy maker, we figure out, is from outside the universe somehow, from another dimension or something, and doesn't follow the rules of this universe, is basically magical, is able to do all sorts of things with the games. And so they're in. He sort of tricks them into these hallways of never-ending doors that wind around and don't go anywhere, and the Donna Doctor actually end up getting separated at some point within that. And within that, the Doctor finds the guy who originally bought the puppet, having now been turned into a puppet himself, and it's got this really creepy look to him. And we've got the toy maker above him as this giant figure, which is one of the pictures or scenes we saw in the trailer of the toy maker above care holding the the strings, essentially the controller of the puppet, above him, holding him there. He said something like bought the toy, paid the price, something along those lines. Played the game and lost, and so now he belongs to the toy maker. And so the doctor is doing that while Donna is meeting some really, really creepy little puppets that are the when he the guy went in originally and bought the Stooky Bill puppet, which was like the dad puppet. Of the set, there was the dad puppet, the mom puppet, and three baby puppets. And so he just bought the dad puppet, and left the wife puppet and or the mom puppet and the baby puppets behind. So Donna now found the mom puppets and the baby puppets, and the mom puppet is doing this weird rhyming thing. It's super creepy, and the babies like attack her, and she has to fight them off and fight off the mom puppet, and she actually tears the head off, and then like threatens the baby puppets and runs off. It's a really creepy scene. I don't know how to describe it, and I. It worked well and I was very uncomfortable, so we're gonna move along. So after that, the doctor and Donna come back together, and then they see the toy maker again in this kind of creepy circus motif situation. They're still in his shop running through his universe, because his shop, like the TARDIS, is bigger on the inside. And so the doctor challenges him to a game. And they play the card game where just have the deck or split the deck, and whoever gets the higher card wins. And the doctor loses, and the toy maker's all excited. Yay, I win, blah, blah, blah. And the doctor says, well, I won one game, you won one game. You know the rules, it's two best two out of three. We have to play another game. And the toy maker seems to only be bound by the rules. He has to follow the rules of the game. So he likes to play games, and he always has to follow the rules. One of the rules seems to be if you challenge him to a game, he has to play. One of them seems to be that if you, or the other one seems to be that once you're in the game, whatever the rules are, the established rules, you have to follow the rules. No cheating. So they play the game. Like I said, the doctor has lost, and the doctor is saying two out of three. The toy maker seems to agree, but is mad and says, well, okay, well, we're going to take it to 2023. And then he starts boxing up his shop. Like, quite literally, the whole thing. Donna and the doctor have to run out into the street, and you see the whole shop, like, fold itself up into a little red box. And, the toy maker has just stepped forward in time, apparently 100 years. So the doctor and Donna have to run back to the TARDIS and meet him back in the present. So they run back to 2023 with the TARDIS and meet back up with the UNIT people to tell them that something is coming, something has come back. It's very dangerous. He tries to warn them, but in the middle of this, in a scene that I really love. As someone who is the correct age to be obsessed with the Spice Girls when I was in middle school, a Spice Girls song starts to play. So the doctor is having this sort of arousing moment of explaining that something horrible is coming. And in the background, you start hearing, la 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 la. La 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 la. And they're like, what is that? Turn it off. And the doctor's just like, he's here. And it's just the happiest song of Spice Up Your Life. And I don't know, this scene gave me so much joy. It's ridiculous, over the top ridiculous, because Neil Patrick Harris, as the toy maker, is coming out of this door in this crazy, like, marching band outfit. Or toy soldier outfit, maybe. But coming out and mouth doing a sing along, lip syncing to the song of Spice Up Your Life by the Spice Girls, and doing all these dance moves to it. And everyone in the room is just staring at him like scared out of their minds while he is doing this ridiculous lip sync and running around and like disappearing and reappearing, like apparating across the room. He dances with Kate and the old companion that I still can't remember her name. And he turns two of the unit guards that Kate sends after him into, he like just touches them and they pop into a bunch of balls. And one of the balls has like his head screaming in it, and it's really creepy and weird. And the doctor's just like, they're dead. And so then they're trying to fire. The unit soldiers all have guns and they're firing at him, and their bullets all turn to rose petals coming at him. And so he's continuing to do his dancing and his like basically music video to Spice Up Your Life. Because they play like practically the whole song, I think, or a good chunk of it. And he's like just continues to dance with these rose petals just falling on him and then covering the floor. And he's like at one point doing like snow angels in rose petals on the floor of this office room. And again, it's just over the top ridiculous. I don't know what to like. It's just craziness. And then he just at the end, at the very end of the song, he does his little dance move and disappears through a trap door on the floor that doesn't actually exist, because when the doctor runs after him, it's not there anymore. And now he's just gone. And I don't know what even to say, because it's probably one of the most ridiculous scenes I've ever seen in anything, let alone in Doctor Who. And yet I love it. I don't know. I don't understand, but it was fabulous. Yeah, very Alice in Wonderland, your laws of physics don't apply here, because the laws of physics don't apply to the toy maker. So there you go. And so they talk a little bit more about who the toy maker is and like how he can do anything. It's interesting they bring up that word binary again, where the doctor says that you think of the world as, you know, the world isn't binary. Of like, what is he saying was binary, but it's something and play. Play is part of it too, and that's where the toy maker comes in. He can do whatever he wants because he's not like bound by, like I was saying, the laws of physics. So he next shows up. They had some sort of crazy beam that they had used to take out the satellite earlier. So now the toy maker has control of the beam and is threatening them with it, and the doctor's trying to keep everybody safe and get away from him. And he challenges the toy maker to a game. And this is where the toy maker tells him, first he tries to entice the toy maker with like, hey, you could, you know, this world is so small for you. I could take you to see the stars and we could play endless games together, you know, out there. And then the toy maker's like, no, this world is the ultimate playground. I want this world. I've become obsessed with it. And I think this might also be where we find out he has the master stuck in a gold tooth, because the master was dying and, you know, was willing, I assume the last version of the doctor after the flux and everything when we saw him last time. Was desperate and dying and played a final game with the toy maker and lost and got stuck forever and eternity in the master or the I keep why do I keep saying that the toy maker's tooth, gold tooth, which we see in a smile, which will come up later again. And so the toy maker also then alludes to some big baddie that we don't know anything about. I'm saying that there was like only one person, creature, entity that he was unwilling to play games with, that he was sort of scared of. And I'm assuming this is the same somebody who Beep the Meep called the boss, which I had assumed could be like the master or something. But if the master's in the toy maker's gold tooth, then it's not the master, it's somebody else. But the toy maker also doesn't say who this entity is, just that it's the one, whoever, that he's unwilling to play games with because he wants to play games with everybody else. But then he uses the beam that he's got control of to shoot the doctor to force a regeneration, because he says that he played the first game with one doctor. He played the second game with David Tennant, this doctor. So by your own rules, I have to play the third game that you just challenged me to, because the doctor challenged him to a game again, with a different doctor. So here we go. We're going to create a different doctor. And then we start to see the regeneration energy come out. We see Donna and the other companion, who I don't know her name, come up to hold his hand, which, as how regenerations have gone in the past with the energy and stuff, seems unsafe, but, you know, maybe neither of them have actually seen a regeneration, so they don't know that. And so so this is where they definitely faked me out real good, because I had, like I said at the beginning of this recording, I was in the assumption that obviously David Tennant is going to regenerate, so we're going to watch him regenerate at some point during this episode. And I had even heard rumors that Chidiatwa was going to be in this episode more than you think. So the idea that they could possibly regenerate David Tennant 2/3 in and let Chidiatwa have a couple scenes before the end of the episode did not seem crazy to me. It did not seem out of the realm of possibilities. So it seemed a little early for David Tennant to be regenerating, but like I said, didn't seem out of the realm of possibilities, and he was going to have to regenerate at some point, right? So I felt very confident that regeneration was going to happen, was, you know, obviously on the table for this episode that I think we'd had it confirmed, and well, we'd seen, I think, an image at least of David Tennant with the regeneration around his head, that he was going to regenerate into Chidiatwa at the very least in the last scene at the end of the episode, right? So when this is happening, I'm like, okay, well, this is it. This is how he regenerates. It makes sense that the Toymaker was somehow able to kill him, essentially. A couple interesting things happening with this, not quite a regeneration, but we'll get there. I really liked what David Tennant's doctor is saying this time, because, you know, the last time he regenerated, it was, I don't want to go, I'm not ready to leave, like, I've got more to do. And this time it was just, it's time. And I really liked that, like, this time, this doctor's face, even though obviously it's not the 10th doctor, it's the 14th doctor, so it's a different doctor, I understand, but this time, this face, David Tennant's doctor is ready to bow out. He's like, okay, it's it. That's it. It's time. Let's go. But then the regeneration energy goes, and then it kind of just dissipates. And the same freaking fake out they did with us during his season way back when he put the regeneration energy into the hand and didn't regenerate and staved David Tennant, he did it again. Not exactly the same thing, but again, a fake out. He's still David Tennant, didn't change his face. And then he tells the two of them, Donna and the other girl that I don't remember her name, she's just the girl who shall not be named at this point, tells them to pull. And so they start pulling on his arms in opposite directions. And they pull out Shurigatma, the next doctor, from him. Like, from his body. And they end up looking like a conjoined twin at one point. And they do this weird thing where they're, like, splitting clothes between the two of them. So, like, the clothes that David Tennant is wearing before they start pulling are all, like, halvesied between him and Shurigatma. So he is still wearing his pants and his, like, undershirt. And his vest, I think. And then Shuri's got the shirt and his underwear and his shoes and socks. And his tie. So I thought that was funny that they decided to, like, split the outfit that way. Since usually the new doctor comes in just wearing the clothes of the old doctor. Though I still don't understand talking about the clothes piece. Especially because they made such a big point of having only the amount of clothing that they started with. But somehow David Tennant was able to change his clothes when he regenerated last time, which I still am not sure how that happened or why that happened. I don't think they explained that, and I am not quite happy with that. Because they do, I think, a decent reason for why David Tennant's face comes back in this last bit of the episode. But there is no explanation for why his clothes came back. And I don't see that there's any reason that David Tennant couldn't have regenerated into Jodie Whittaker's outfit. And, yeah, I think that that is a plot hole missed thing that I don't like. I don't like that they seem to have this weird thing where, like, every other time the Doctor regenerates into the same clothes that the last Doctor was wearing. And even when they do this weird, what they're calling bi-generation, which is a brand new thing that he just came up with. They said that used to be a myth, or that should be a myth, it shouldn't be possible, but here we did it. They do the whole halvesies on the clothes thing. So, like, they seem to care about that, and yet they don't, because they made David Tennant come back in not Jodie's outfit, and I don't get it, don't like it, there's no explanation that I'm aware of, not happy about it. But moving on back to this episode, because that isn't even in this episode, but whatever. The Toymaker even is surprised that the Doctor is able to bi-generate, is what he's calling it now. Where he's able to regenerate before his last one dies, I guess. So instead of regenerating into a new body, he generated a new body and kept his old one at the same time. With the idea that he's eventually going to die in this body and then Shuri will continue. So Shuri's still, like, he just regenerated early, but, like, is still a future version of David Tennant's version of 14 after 14 has lived some more. So it's very confusing. So it's like Shuri popped forward in time from the actual regeneration, which is going to be taking place way in the future. And now he's come back and he's just a new generation of the Doctor, but he has the memories of David Tennant living through his rest of his life, I guess. I'm not quite clear on how all that's going to work, but it's interesting and it's kind of fun. But anyway, the Doctor uses this to say that he and... So 14 and 15 are both there and they are the same person. So they get to play together against the Toymaker. And they decide to play ball because they're playing a game. And so they have a very intense version of handball where they're all very... I don't know. Athletically and beautifully throwing the ball back and forth at each other. And the Toymaker is the one who ends up losing. He drops the ball. And so the Doctor says that he will... he'll take his winning by having the Toymaker kicked out of the universe, basically. And the Toymaker gets folded up like his shop and put back into the box, which is the box that they carried out with... from the Toymaker's shop way back when. at the very beginning, or back in the 1920s when he put a shop down like that. So he ends up in the box of his shop, and Kate Lethbridge Stewart picks it up, says to take it to the basically safest vault anywhere and have it covered in salt, which is also a tie back into the Doctor blames himself for the Toymaker getting into our universe somehow, and somehow it's related to the fact that he talked about that weird line of salt thing at the edge of the universe, that that was what brought him in. I'm not sure how the Doctor figured that out or why that would be true, but Doctor said it, so I guess somehow the salt thing has changed the universe. And I'm assuming that is also why there's now this thing where covering something in salt will help keep it sealed and protected. I don't know, but that's what we're doing with the box and the Toymaker, is we are covering them in salt. The other thing that is strange, or that you see here, is the Toymaker's tooth. Gold tooth doesn't end up in the box, and nobody, including the Doctor, notices. Well, somebody notices, but we don't know who yet. But somebody who has access to this weird pad up at Unit, and it seems like a woman's hand, or at least somebody with nail polish's hand, and like manicured long nails, red nails, reminded me of the whole Lucy situation, which I hope they're not going to do again. But something like that. Somebody took the gold tooth that has the master in it. I'm assuming for nefarious purposes, because it wasn't the Doctor. So the master's coming back, is what I take from that. We have been warned the master is coming back. A new version again. All right, but now we get to some of the interesting stuff where Shooty 15 is comforting 14. And they're not sure what they're gonna do to have two doctors like sharing a TARDIS, and like this shouldn't be possible, so what are we gonna do now? And 15 is taking this very, very easily. He doesn't seem concerned at all. Which is when we figure out that he has, or when he kind of explains that he has 14's memories. And he says that the Toymaker's energy and universe is still kind of there for a minute. So he's able to take those rules. He takes out this big, ridiculous, like cartoonish hammer thing and hits the. hits the TARDIS to create a second one. And he then takes his version and leaves David Tennant with his. But anyway, before that happens, they're having this very interesting heart-to-heart about how much trauma the 14 has and how he needs to work through it. And 15 is saying that I'm good now because I am in your future still. And I'm okay because you dealt with it. And you're gonna have to basically settle down and learn to live your life without so much hectic running, like that you are too crazy and over the top, and you need to sort of calm down, figure yourself out a bit, do some self-searching. And Donna gets in on it too, saying that you need to stop. And the Doctor says, I don't know how. 14 says, I don't know how. And Donna basically says, I can help you. I can tell you how to do it. You're going to stay with me. You're going to be family. And, yeah. This part is where I start to be wondering, like, how do I actually feel about this? On the one hand, I do think it's nice that they're admitting that the Doctor needs help. This whole like mental health thing of the Doctor needs essentially therapy or work, I think is nice to talk about, like that there's been so much that has been going on, especially recently the flux and all of that, that like all the companions that they've lost, that the doctor needs time, is basically what they've decided to say, is that the one thing that the doctor has in spades is time, and he needs to use it. And so it is decided that 14 is going to stay with Donna and her family and learn to live day to day like Donna had to do, like a human. And 15 is going to fly off and be the doctor. And I like this ending in that we don't have to watch David Tennant regenerate and disappear, which is nice. But I am like sort of confused on about leaving him in London with Donna and a TARDIS. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I enjoyed it. I like it. Emotionally, it's very fun. So I'm going to go with like, but on a technicality, I'm unclear on what this actually means for the universe and for the doctor. And I'm assuming that 14 still has to eventually die, but this body's actually going to like die and get buried or burned or something. While 15 is, because 15 is already out there and is already regenerated. So is 14's body just going to disappear? I don't know. Oh, there is something fun. The new TARDIS has a wheelchair ramp, so it's accessible finally, which is nice. And they talked about that with the ramps inside. There are no stairs anymore. It's all ramps. But yeah, that's 15's TARDIS, has a jukebox and a wheelchair ramp. So that's kind of cool. I like it. But anyway, yeah. So 14 is staying with Donna, and they have this great little scene at the end. This is where I wish Wilf had been there, and I'm assuming Wilf would have been there if the actor who played Wilf had still been alive. So RIP. But I think that story arc wise, it's nice that we saw a lot of anger and pain in 14. And this storyline is basically like, okay, we understand that he's not just going to get to be a happy-go-lucky guy again. He's going to go take the time, work on himself, get his head in the right space. And we're now giving him time to do that. But we, as the people watching the show, don't have to watch it because we're just going to watch the future version that has already done the work and now gets to be, what, from what we're seeing from Shudi's performance so far, a much happier, fun-loving, freewheeling doctor, and not one bogged down so much in the trauma. Which is interesting because that's a lot of what we've seen in Modern Who. Most of the doctors have been very serious and pain-filled. I'm going to go with Matt Smith's doctor being really the only one who wasn't, but even he was sometimes, but he was trying so hard not to be, that he ignored it a lot of the time. So, practicality wise, I'm wondering what the doctor's actually doing while he's on Earth. Because we've got him like living and staying with Donna and her family, which is nice. We find out that he is taking the TARDIS for little trips, and he is taking Rose on trips in the TARDIS, which I think is fabulous, and I want to see Big Finish do a bunch of stories about his adventures with Rose Noble. Wandering around in their TARDIS, or in the Doctor's TARDIS, doing whatever. So I get that, but is like he working for UNIT now? Because Donna apparently now works for UNIT. She was offered a job during this episode. So they're gonna do much better for money now. because she's now making a good, really good salary and working for unit, so he's probably going to stay. I'm wondering if the doctor's maybe working for unit too and also pulling a salary for the family, which would be nice. But yeah, I'm just wondering what he's doing with his free time now. But also, if Tennant is living in modern day London and working for unit, you'd think that he's kind of taking care of the earth, so to speak. So 15 doesn't really need to hang out in modern England because he's left a doctor caring for it, vaguely speaking. So yeah, does the new 15 not interact with unit and not is, are they not needed? I don't know, I'm just kind of confused of what that really means practically speaking, because we've got this cool unit set up now, but if Donna works for unit and the doctor's living with Donna, 14 is still there living with Donna. Like, there's no reason that while he's living on Earth and mostly, dealing with himself, it's not like he's not going to help when there's an alien invasion. So, I don't know. I'm just wondering if this next season and this next era is going to see 15 off on other planets a lot more, or in the future more, or something, because it seems like the way I'm reading it, modern day England, London isn't gonna need him because it's already got 14 just hanging out being there for time being. So I'm a little confused on what that means, practically speaking, for the show and whether 15 is gonna hang out in modern London the way that all the other doctors seem to have done. So that's one thing, and what that means for like his interaction with Unit, because I hope we continue to see Unit. I like these characters. I want them to continue. But I don't feel like, but now, Donna works there, and the other companion girl works there. I mean, maybe they would be recurring characters again, but it seems unlikely to me that they would recur very often. So when you do go to unit, you're not just not going to see them, or I don't know, I just am confused by what that means for using unit and all of that. And all of modern London, really, for going forward. I'm kind of wondering what that logistically means. And so that is my hesitation with the ending. Is I think it's beautiful and fun, and I love that we didn't have to watch David Tennant die. And I love that he's living out that it means that Donna gets this beautiful ending where she's living out her days with 14 and her husband and her daughter and her mom and her grandpa, and they're all like living happily ever after working for UNIT. That's fabulous. Love it. But again, for the show, what does that mean? Because again, we can't see David Tennant and Catherine Tate all the time when Shooty comes back to London, right? Like, that it doesn't make any sense. That's not going to be what happens. So why don't we see them when he's in modern day London? Like, what is the explanation? Is he just avoiding them? Is anything that happens just not big enough to draw their attention? Or is he avoiding modern London and UNIT now? For 50 years or something. So that is what I end with, is that I really loved this episode. I am sort of still, I'm hesitant about this ending based on what happens in this next season will tell me whether I liked this ending or not, is what I think I'm at. Is that I feel like I will only know whether I enjoy this ending in retrospect because I love it for now. But I am so sort of confused about what it means for the future of the show. Excuse me, I'm yawning, I'm tired, it's my bedtime. but I needed to talk about this first. I am very confused about what this means for the future of the show, and I hope it means good things. So, fingers crossed that it will be a good thing. And it won't cause problems for the show, but I do, if we're not going to see David Tennant and Catherine Tate all the time whenever they're in modern London and something goes down, I do feel like now that they are tied to unit like this, that might need an explanation. Unless we're just not going to see unit anymore either. Or maybe they're just going to avoid London and unit in general. Maybe we'll hear about them off state, like off screen, but they won't be on screen. I don't know. I'm just rambling about my concern about that ending. That I am kind of concerned and confused about the ending. But otherwise, very happy with the episode. Very happy with the arc in general. I enjoyed all three of the specials. They were all fun. Two of them particularly were creepy. I thought the Toymaker was a really interesting villain. I think it sets up very nicely that obviously the Master's coming back. So we're going to see the Master again in some shape or form. Though I do think it's interesting that neither, there's two doctors there, and neither of them noticed and did anything about the tooth. And nobody at UNIT, like, they made a big deal about the tooth and he showed it off a couple times. The Toymaker did, so I think it's weird that nobody noticed the fallen gold tooth, except for the person, whoever it was, who picked it up. All we saw was their hand. So all I can really tell you is they're a white person with red nails. So we shall see what goes on there, but I'm assuming that means the Master is coming back, so that's the hint we've got for either the Christmas special or more likely, I would assume, next season sometime. So yeah, I think that is it. I had a really good time. I like that we got to see Donna's family at the end. I kind of wish there was more of them. I'm kind of sad that they were really in the first episode only, because the second episode obviously was just a bottle episode with just Donna and the doctor, and then the entities who were copying them. And then this last episode, her family really was only in the very, very end, the happily ever after epilogue, and were not involved in the action of the situation. So, and I like those characters too, so it would be nice to see more of them. I especially want to see more of Rose as she grows up. I think it would be fabulous. But I do think that this, the way they ended this, the one thing I will say about this ending means that I think we might not see Rose. Because there's no reason for her to run off with 15 when she's living with 14 and has a TARDIS with 14. So she'll probably be having her adventures with 14, which we might see on Big Finish, but we won't see on the main, in the main series. So I think I can stop rambling now. I had a really good time. Good episodes. I enjoyed myself thoroughly. I'm very excited about the Christmas episode. Okay, I lied. I do have more to say. So 15, I do want to talk briefly about 15. He comes in his underwear and a white shirt, kind of unbuttoned, and then shoes and socks. Other than the shoes, he's very risky business. Tom Cruise sliding around. That is the outfit that he's wearing. Which I find interesting. They had a couple shots where it seemed to focus on the fact that he was in his underwear, to me. Or maybe I'm just noticing it very strongly. But I thought that that was an interesting choice. I think, again, they did it for the clothes thing, splitting the clothes so there wasn't new clothes for him. I assume that he will have an outfit next time. So the clothes are whatever, they were interesting. They were kind of funny. But what was really interesting was just the attitude, the way that 15 is playing this. It seems like 14 must have done a lot of work because he's a very different person, very flirty and funny and lighthearted, touchy-feely, like he was hugging. I'm very interested to see because I think that this new doctor is going to be a very different person, which will be interesting to see. Not that the Doctor hasn't been some of those characters before, but it feels different this time, and I'm not sure why. Maybe just this actor, maybe it's a choice, maybe it's on purpose. I assume it's on purpose. But I'm excited to see what that means for the Doctor going forward. And I really need to stop now because I will just keep talking forever. And like I said, it is already past my bedtime. I need to go to bed. I need to stop rambling about Doctor Who and sleep. So that is what I'm going to do next. And I hope you all enjoyed this as well. I'd love to hear from you. Contact info is in the description. Let me know what you thought. Let me know if you agree with me. Let me know if you disagree with me. But I am very excited. I've loved all of this stuff, and I'm really happy that Doctor Who is back, and I'm very excited for the Christmas special, and I'm very excited for season one again of 15. The 15th Doctor coming on, and I'm really excited to see what's next for the Doctor. So, yay! Bye, everyone.